As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
It's a new day. Yes, it is.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome
to Wild and Crazy.
Athletic presents Hogan Johns.
Hogan for the win.
We're going to consistently put players in position to succeed. Most important piece is we're going to take the North and never give it back.
From CHGO, it's Adam Hogan.
I don't think that this is a full rebuild, but you definitely have to retool your roster.
And from The Athletic, it's Adam Johns.
Hey, what's up, Flus?
And we're going to have measurable ways for standards of performance every single rep, every single game.
Anyway, who cares?
Now, here they are, the Adams. Hogan Johns.
What's up? Welcome in. Hogue and Johns with you. And we found Nate Tice. It took a week, but we found him. He's back.
I'm back. Yeah, I'm up and at him. My son actually slept the night last night. He woke up around 2, so it wasn't too bad. But last week, he did not do that. I all of a sudden zonked out at 5:30 in the morning because I'd been up all night. All of a sudden, I come to Kent Garrison's text going, "Hey, are you up?" And I was not up. I was definitely not up. And that is a weird feeling for me because usually I've become a morning person in my adult life. But it was just a moment of panic. So I apologize, but I'm glad I can make it up somehow, some way to you guys, maybe a week later, or try to make it up to you guys.
And that sleep, that like come back, you know, in bed back by 5 sleep, it's deep.
It's deep.
The dreams are wild.
Yep. It was some lucid dreaming going on. I felt very Inception-y. Very much like I was controlling my dream going on. And then I woke up and I was like, man, why am I talking to Kent in my dream? And then there it is. And I wake it up. There's a text message from him. That's exactly what happened. Oh, I was out drooling like everything. And I don't drool, but it was my best equivalent for it is during training camp when I was playing quote unquote. And you'd get like a 2 days, you'd actually get like a nice little break, like a 3-hour break. You can usually study, but you can get like a nice hour, 2-hour nap in. Every single one of those naps drool because you're just out cold during camp. But that was my closest equivalent that I could have to the sleep I got last Tuesday that ended up missing the show.
I mean, having a newborn is kind of like training camp.
It is
a grind.
It's
a grind.
It is. But
Dane Brugler said the best equivalent he has to having a newborn is like being a coach or scout. And I was like, oh, great. Like, I can't. And that's exactly what it is like.
Never enough coffee.
Honestly, it actually works out pretty well for us. So we get 2 episodes out of you guys instead of just 1. So yeah, if you missed the episode last week with Robert Mays, you can go back and check it out. We encourage you to do so. But Nate's here this week. We got a lot of questions. John's put a request out on Twitter to get some questions coming in, and we also want to hear your thoughts on the Bears draft class and who you like. So, Johns, I'm going to turn it over to you here to
you read want me to start the with questions. These questions? You want to start by asking him about Darnell Wright and everybody else in the Bears?
Maybe that makes sense. Yeah, let's do that. We'll start with the Bears' first round pick, and then if there's anyone else in the draft class that you feel strongly about one way or the other. But okay. Just the way the first round ended up playing out, where a situation we spent months talking about, Jalen Carter being on the board, still available to draft, and then not surprisingly, which we also talked about a lot, the Bears not being a team that was really keen on drafting them. Instead, they move back again, and they end up with Darnell Wright filling one of their biggest needs.
Yeah, with the Jalen Carter stuff, as talented of a player as he is, I understand the Bears kind of, and Ryan Poles' answers the weeks afterwards, where he was saying, like, you know, just team makeup and all that in our locker room. And they're starting at ground zero. The Eagles are coming off a Super Bowl run with a veteran-laden team with former Georgia teammates on the Eagles. It's a much easier to accept a player that you might have quote-unquote character concerns when you're in that situation than when you're in the Bears, and it could go askew. It could be like a rotary, just a little bit, 2% off, and then just also just tilts all the way off because just your locker room is not built for that. So I understood that answer about why not going Carter, but Darnell Wright, I'm super high on. I came to him. I watch offensive line for the offensive guys. I go skill position first just because I have it, just because that's what I've always been like. You're watching quarterbacks or receivers. That's the positions you watch, and that's what I've been trained to do. And then I get to line. I love watching O-line. Paris Johnson and Darnell Wright, I thought, were clearly the two best offensive tackles in this draft class, not including the offensive lineman from Northwestern, but just the true offensive tackles. And I actually really liked Wright as far as he had more polish to his game. And that I watched that Tennessee offense thinking he's not going to have a lot of real reps. You know, it's a very gimmicky offense. And you watch it, plenty of reps translate from the college level to the NFL level. I have no real concerns about, like, maybe he was a late bloomer as a senior. He was kind of disappointing until then, because I actually thought his junior tape was decent. So you could see it kind of coming along his junior year, and then a senior, he just ascended to a new level. Huge, big, strong, very athletic for his size, carries his weight well. He can pull. He's powerful in the run game. Zone stuff might not be ideal for him, but I actually think he's a good enough athlete to handle that. So with the Bears want to run a lot of zone scheme with Chris Morgan and Luke Getsy, I think he can handle it. I think this is a compliment saying that he's scheme proof as far as run game. He can handle whatever run you throw at him. You can run behind him. He can do backside cutoffs. He can pull. Then in pass pro, everyone's talking about the Alabama game, him going against Will Anderson. Even games before that, when he truly has to kick set and get out of his stance, it's when it's like, oh, dang. Like, you didn't know he had it in him, because so many balls get out quick in that Tennessee offense. So when he actually has to do those true pass sets against speed on the outside, that's when you can see him kind of like, you see it. Like, you see that's a true NFL tackle right there. So I think he's a great combination of power, athleticism, technique. He also shows advanced hand usage. Like, he has moves already. We usually talk about that with defensive ends or defensive linemen. He actually has counters to their counters, if that makes sense, as far as the hand fighting. He loves a snatch trap move, which is defensive lineman has the two hands into you. You snatch it down, and you, like, basically use their momentum against them, and so they nosedive into the ground. He's already using that, which is cool to see at the college level. Paris Johnson wasn't really using that. Paris Johnson was more of an idea, but he had amazing tools with some flashes. Darnell Wright has more polish to him that I think he's even gotten credit for. But anyways, long story short, love the pick. Love the player. I've compared him. I said the upside of him is he's like a 90% Tristan Wirfs. Like, I think that type of player, kind of an athletic mauler. But yeah, I'm a big fan of him. I love the pick. I love the selection. Build up around Justin Fields as well. Help the offense out. And then I could talk about any other picks if you want. But that was just Darnell Wright to start with the first round pick.
Let's go with the skill guys then.
Yeah.
So you started with them. Roschon Johnson, the running back. Then Tyler Scott, the receiver from Cincinnati. What stands out to you about them?
Two personal favorites of this draft. So it's kind of funny they both went to the same team. I'm kind of excited about that. A big fan of both of these players. Kind of in different ways. Roschon, obviously they're different positions, but as far as narrative, Roschon Johnson really is a complete back that I like a lot. He's a three down back, meaning he can catch the ball. He can be on all three downs. He can pass protect. He's already good in pass protection, which is cool to see going from a college to the NFL level. You don't really see a lot of good protection backs in college. That's usually what you have to work on. So he's already competent in that area, which is already, he already has a role. That's really cool. He does everything well, maybe nothing overwhelming, but everything well. I've compared him to Perine, Sam J. Perine, who's with the Bengals, now with the Broncos. I think he's like a plus version of that, where he does everything well. You're never going to design a play for him, but he's going to do it well and execute. I think he's a team first type of guy. I ended up having him pretty high on my running back rankings. I want to say off the top of my head, he was running back 4. after the two guys that went in the first round, Robinson, Gibbs, and then Charbonnet, who went to the Seahawks. And I had Roschon Johnson four because I just liked his game. I think he just does so much well. And I really think Bears fans are going to like him. I really do. I think he's going to have a role early because he is smart and a good, tough player. But having said all that, I keep talking about intelligence and everything. He's a good athlete and everything. Like, he is a good running back, but he just does all the intangible things as well. And then Tyler Scott, I think he's going to take a minute to come along. He's still learning the receiver position, but he has sticky hands. He's a little slight of build, but he does all of his best work down the field. Who's a quarterback for the Bears that likes to push the ball down the field? I think they have they can have potential, like some good chemistry synergy wise. I don't think he'll never be a one or even a two, but I think as a complementary piece in your pass game, like a good number three, that's his upside, which is good. Finding that in the fourth round. And also just his skill set is down the field. He has true intermediate down the field speed, can take the top off, is a smooth athlete. Like when he comes out of breaks, he just has to work on the route running stuff. He's a lower slider build, you know, so there are some limitations to his game, but he can have a role early and do it well because he also has good ball tracking skills. Like, it's not just an athlete running out there, just running, hey, go. You know, he actually has some talent to him as far as his hands, his hand-eye coordination, his ball catching ability. So I think early on in his career, he'll be, you know, down the pecking order, but down the road, maybe in year two, year three, and we'll see flashes of it as him as a downfield weapon.
But Nate, real quick, let's get schemey here for a second. So let's think about the four main receiving weapons. Yep. Now that and I shouldn't say because we don't know if Tyler Scott's really, I guess, the fourth guy. There's still Velus Jones technically. We'll see how it all plays out in training camp. But DJ Moore, Darnell Mooney, Chase Claypool, and now let's think about. Even Velus showed an ability to be that deep ball guy a little bit towards the end. But whether it's Velus Jones or Tyler Scott, talk to us from like a defensive standpoint and how you're trying to stop that. How different is this for Justin now that he's got these pieces he didn't have last year to really unlock that passing game? How is this all going to help him?
He's got juice. That's what he's got. He's got down the field juice. Guys that can truly stack corners if they beat them and have actually come down with the ball. So as far as pushing the ball, he already has that way better than he had before. As far as guys that are attack down the field, that's what DJ Moore does best. Is he's a vertical he's a vertical X and a good one. And I really do think he, in playing with bad quarterbacks, he's still produced. And I think Fields is a better quarterback than he's had in quite a few years. So I think those two it's a perfect pairing as far as skill set for the receiver and Fields. So, but if you look at everybody else, I think Claypool is best, even though he's a big, big, big athletic guy, he's best horizontally than vertically. So I think he's your yak guy. He's your yards after catch guy. He's the guy you're working underneath. So if you're just looking at common concepts, Moore is going to be the intermediate deep guy pushing and breaking off. And then Claypool is going to be the guy working underneath on the horizontal, or maybe a lot. He has to be on the move to be best. Jet sweeps, crossing routes, digs. That's how Claypool is used best, which is fine. That's great. Him and Moore is best working vertically. So now you got the horizontal, you got the vertically. I think Mooney is your slot. Claypool, I go back and forth of whether I want him in the slot. I think he should do it for a handful of games. I think there's a question about this, so we might as well just talk about it right now. Claypool, like once after the trade, Steelers were trying to use him a bunch in the slot this year and kind of mixed results. And then I think once he got to the Bears trade, like he only had four. The most routes he had from the slot with the Bears was four in a game. Like it wasn't really, they just kind of sprinkled in a little bit. So I think they kind of, Mooney and him will kind of maybe be the Z and the slot kind of working off each other. Mooney, I think, is also another guy that does his best work intermediate, breaking out, breaking in, get the ball in his hands a little bit as well. So he's kind of going to be your do-it-all-ish as far as kind of mixing Claypool and Moore skill sets. I like that three. They have synergy. Is it the best in the league? No, but it's more than fine. And also with skill sets that kind of all mesh together. And then four, I think, would be Scott, but also Velus Jones. Like, you need five. And I think he could be your gadget guy, and that's fine. He could be the gimmick guy or just sprinkle in and, you know, bubble guy, yak guy. That's not the worst thing in the world. So I think just overall, this passing core, this pass catching group has a lot of more juice. They just down the field and the ball within their in their hands, where you can see some of the screen game, yard after catch game, underneath stuff work a lot better than it has in the past when the guys were more big and plotting.
So this is a good segue into, let's go to our first question. You did answer, I think, Nate, one of them. But this is from TW. What are reasonable statistical expectations for you guys when it comes to Justin Fields this upcoming season?
It's hard. I the passing numbers have to improve as far as completion percentage and sacks. That's where I want to see the improvement of that. But I think reasonable would be upper 2,000 yards passing, low 20s throwing touchdowns, and then if he hovers around 10 picks, I think that would be a good year and a reasonable expectations. I think that's a tick above what he did last year, and I think with the group he's got this year, he can do. Can attain that. And I think rushing wise, you might see like a 10% downtick because I think that's not sustainable what he did last year. I mean, he had to because he was the best player on the field for the Bears and they're just, hey, go make it happen. So I think you get a 10%-ish decrease rushing wise, yards wise, design rush wise, scrambling wise. But then you see maybe a 10-20% increase on the passing game wise. And I think that's a reasonable expectations where you see about hovering about 60% completion percentage, mid upper 2000s passing yards. He had a decent touchdown percentage last year, like as far as how many attempts went for a touchdown. So just, you know, hopefully extrapolate that, you know, disco stew meme, you know, the graph going up, like just maybe that, like more attempts, he gets more touchdowns. So I think maybe that upper 2000s passing yards would be good. And maybe about low mid 20 touchdowns with 10 or so picks would be a good year from Fields.
So that's like Josh Allen year two. So if you look at his numbers, that's 58. So Josh Allen, year two, 2019, completed 58.8% of his passes, 3,089 passing yards, 20 touchdowns, 9 interceptions. If you look at, here's another one. Name this quarterback. This is year two for this quarterback. Completed 66.6% of his passes, 3,223 passing yards, 24 touchdowns, 12 interceptions. Do you know who that quarterback is? 95.4 passer rating.
Who was that? That wasn't Hurts, was it? No.
It's Mitch Trubisky.
You're Ooh.
Wow, you got
I'm sure you just made it. I'm sure you made a lot of fans just happy right now.
Wait, so actually that's a so he threw for 3,200 that year?
Yes, it's year two.
See, that's where Nate, I've been on this 4,000 minimum between passing and rushing yards.
Like total yards,
Between the two, you have to get to 4,000 this year because last year I think he had like 2,200 passing, and I don't have it in front of me right now. And then obviously he went over 1,000 rushing. And so like you just look at this offense and his natural progression, asking for like 800 more passing yards to me is not asking for that much.
Nope.
And then you want to see the rushing come down a little bit just like naturally because like you said, it's not sustainable. So if he can get to 4,000 where he's more in the like 3,200 range, which hearing that Mitch Trubisky did that in year two shouldn't be asking too much.
A huge ask.
And then 700 to 800 rushing yards sprinkled in. Because the reality is Justin's too good not to break off some of these 50-yard touchdowns.
Right.
Runs. They're going to happen.
It's going to happen on a scramble. Like, even if it's not called, it's going to happen. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's fair.
I would look at another good one right here because this is a guy was more of a, we think of him now, but this guy entering the league was more of a project than people realize, and that's Donovan McNabb. McNabb in year three. 3,200 yards, 25 touchdowns, 12 picks. That's kind of reasonable. And ran for 480 and 2 touchdowns. So I'd say maybe a little bit more than that. But I think throwing the ball wise in 17 games, that's kind of a reasonable expectation. And with a little bit more rushing the ball or a little bit more runability than McNabb had early. You gotta remember Andy Reid wasn't doing that stuff.
That's an interesting comp. I like that.
Right.
Yeah.
That's kind of who I compared Anthony Richardson this year too. I was like, we got to remember, like McNabb was not what we think of McNabb now. Like, McNabb was a project. Like, it was, he was a lot of flashes and a lot of awesome stuff at Syracuse, but we think of him now as a lot different than we did when he was entering the league. It was like one of my first football memories was that draft, the 99 draft. Oh, I'm sure for Bears fans too. Sorry. Sorry.
All those drafts are memorable for bad reasons.
Yeah, right, right.
Too Johns, many. Go ahead.
All yeah. right, Bob Swirsky. I don't think it's the real Bob Swirsky. This continues the field conversation. What is the worst possible season Justin Fields can have while still solidifying the Fields is the guy feeling and not making a round one QB a must next April?
First of all, how did you not ask that question with the accent?
Bob Swirsky. It's too early. I need another call. It's 10:30.
That's up.
I need like an Italian beef and a...
Yeah,
beer or something.
Change the tone.
I like this question because this is essentially he's asking a destination you don't want to be in. Like,
no man's land.
What's the minimum where you're still not drafting the quarterback next year, which is like not a great place to be. Like, you kind of want to know if you're in one place or the other.
Yeah, I would say all those stats I just laid out now just. Subtract 10% from them, and then I would be a little worried. I would say if the passing is like plateaus where it's barely a little bit better than last year, that's when I'd be worried. You don't even have to look at stats. Yeah. You can just look at the flow of the offense. We know what you can do running the ball, but I think if passing, if you're not seeing a jump, a big uptick, then like that's where you're getting worried. But if you see that half tick, that would be a little, that's no man's land. Like if he throws for 2,500 yards and 20 touchdowns and it's like 12 picks, like it's a little worse than those McNabb stats, I'd be okay, but then I'd be starting to kind of go like, oh god, is this what it is like for the rest of his career? But that's just he's a running fool.
Say he does that, but he still flirts with like the rushing record, and he has all these explosive runs and they're exciting and the stands of Soldier Field are going crazy. Like, how would you wait? Yeah, okay,
half tick better passing the ball. So I would say if he finishes with like 2,500 yards and 59% passing the ball, then I'd be okay. The Josh Allen comparison wasn't bad either. Those stats that you laid out year two, then I'd be okay with it. But we got to see some jump throwing the ball wise. He can't sustain all these sacks. It's just a little scary.
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
Hey, if you're like me, an outfit, good or bad, can impact your entire day. Wearing a starchy shirt, that just doesn't feel good. You're not comfortable. It's hard to look good and feel good at the same time. But that's where Rhone comes in, because men's closets were due for a radical reinvention, and Rhone stepped up to the challenge. Rhone's commuter collection is the most comfortable, breathable, and truly versatile set of products known to man. They have products for every occasion. We're talking about the world's most comfortable pants, dress shirts, quarter zips, polos, blazers. They look great as individual pieces that work seamlessly together. Rhone's signature four-way stretch fabric is breathable, flexible, and works everywhere from your commute to work to even the 19th hole. It's time for unparalleled confidence without all the hassle. My favorite Rhone shirt is this white dress shirt. Looks like a dress shirt, but it also looks casual at the same time. It's got anti-odor technology. They call it Gold Fusion. And it doesn't get wrinkled. It stays fresh and clean all day long. No lingering odors or anything like that. The Commuter Collection is easy to care for while staying fresh and odor-free. The Commuter Collection can get you through any workday, straight to whatever comes next. Head to roan.com/Adam. Use promo code Adam to save 20% off your entire order. That's 20% off your entire order when you head to Roan. That's R-H-O-N-E.com/Adam. Use code Adam. It is time to find your corner office comfort.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Nate, I like this question for you because you're a Luke Getsy fan. This is from Andrew Cherry on Twitter. The Bears are returning the same coaching staff, which is almost unheard of in today's NFL, from a 3-14 team. With a roster full of young players and developmental projects, rate on a scale from 1 to 10 your confidence in this coaching staff and your rationale as to why.
Yeah, I've been pretty high in the staff overall as they guided the team to a number one pick. I still am confident in them. I would put it, you're never like a 10. I would say maybe a 7 or an 8 would be my confidence in the staff, which I really do think it's a lot of good ball coaches that I think just understand what they are. And I know that sounds stupid, but they know what they are, and they know what they were experimenting with last year. And changing the offense midstream. That's why I'm high on Getsy. I think there's some frustrations with how they threw the ball, what their third down calls were, but I think he was just going like, you see what I got? I think I've said this on the show. It's like, this is what I got to work with. So let's not kill ourselves about it. And so I do think Getsy kind of gets it. And that's the biggest compliment I can give someone. I've worked with Chris Morgan before, the offensive line coach. I worked with him in Atlanta. I like him. I think he does know what he's doing. Just saying that, so I do have confidence in him. Defense wise, even just starting with the head coach with Eberflus. So I think they're competent, and I love their game plans in the second half of the year, especially that Eagles game. Holy crap! That's the Chiefs took stuff from that in the playoffs, in the Super Bowl. They took stuff from the Bears game because of what the stuff they were doing against Jalen Hurts and that offense. And that's a compliment right there, that the Super Bowl champs are like, we're studying that film, and from a team that had the number one pick. So overall, I think this is a more respected staff than I think people even realize. And I respect the hell out of them. So I'm more like a 7 or 8 because I think they get it. They know what they are. And now we're going to see some dividends paid from what they've invested in as far as practice wise. That's starting that practice I watched with you guys in training camp. I mean, remember, I was just like, man, it's competent. It's clean. Everybody's going, knows what they're doing. They're teaching. It's a staff full of teachers. So I do think that people are going to see, kind of buy in more as much as maybe I have already.
Yeah. There's purpose. There's not a wasted minute with this staff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And not in a bad way, not in a drill sergeant way, more in hey, this is our next teaching period. We're doing this. Okay. We're on the field, and this is what we're doing. And I like that. They have a plan.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. They have an identity. They know what that identity is, and they know exactly what they want to do to execute to be that team. That's just not what the Bears used to have under the last staff. So that part of it's refreshing. And I've said this before, but you look across the landscape of all 32 teams, it is very rare to have a team return pretty much everyone on their coaching staff and everyone in the front office. Because usually you're on one end of the spectrum or the other, where either people got fired or people got hired somewhere else because they did such a good job. And the Bears were just sort of in this perfect storm where, even though Ian Cunningham got offers, or at least one offer to be the Cardinals GM, and he turned it down, they kept that continuity both in the front office, which I think paid off in the draft. And then Nate, that just doesn't really happen in today's NFL.
No, at all. If you have any semblance of confidence, especially staffs like this that are connected, Getsy's a Packers guy. He has plenty of connections. I'm just speaking of one guy, but maybe some other assistants, lower assistants, none of them got poached. And I think that's super interesting. And like I think you guys have said already a couple times, is that that doesn't happen. Like usually you lose one guy, you know, one assistant coach or one personnel member. I don't know, this whole offseason, it just really felt to me as a neutral fan watching the Bears is that I watched them and I'm watching this process. They just seemed kind of confident about how everything, about what their plan was. And maybe, of course, it's ducks on a pond. It can seem that way in press conferences, but it just seems to me that they're just like, no, this is fine. Everything is fine in a good way. Not everything's burning around them. That's not that meme, you know, with the dog with the coffee saying this is fine. I mean, this more in a good way. I think they're just everybody seemed like they're in lockstep. And I like that. And I don't know. It's just for someone that just observes a lot of teams in the league, this is one of the more, it seems like they do have a plan about what they want to do. And if they have backup plans when the initial plan A doesn't work, not a lot of teams do that. Look at what Detroit did in the draft. Their guy got picked before them and they didn't have a backup plan. And then all of a sudden they're trading back and they're taking a running back at 12. That's what can happen. That's just one instance of the draft. The Bears just seem like they have a plan with everything. It's a good thing. It's a very, very good thing.
And it starts at the top. Like everybody is in on it.
Yes.
You were the worst team in football. I got the first pick, but George McCaskey, who hates losing by all means, like he understood what that season had to be for everybody to come back. I think James Rowe was the only assistant coach that left the staff, the assistant defensive backs coach, but Alan Williams is basically, I know he's DC, but that's his specialty as well. All right, next question from Ryan on Twitter. What are your thoughts on Tyson Badgett? He's the undrafted free agent quarterback, Division II record setter, I believe, too.
Yes.
Any chance he can make a splash at training camp?
I think he has a chance to stick as far as maybe a backup guy or practice squad guy. He put up some huge numbers. He threw for like 150 touchdowns in college, something like that. They were chucking it. Every single play. You want to see the opposite of the Bears offense last year? Watch this school chucking it, airing it out. He throws. He's a little mechanical throwing the ball. He does have some arm talent, but I was saying this in the pre-show is that he throws. You can tell he's been working with a quarterback coach, like a private QB coach, because he throws how a lot of kids are being taught how to throw these days, which is short-stepping it, flipping, like violently flipping the hips, and then the arm follows the hips. You're trying to create a lot of torque. I have found that in a game that some accuracy stuff can come from that. And I think there is some accuracy concerns when I watch him. I'm not saying he's bad or anything. He can throw it fine, but, he has some talent. He has some arm talent. It's not the worst kind of undrafted guy or guy to have on your roster to work him out. Cause there might be something there. You don't put up that many touchdowns by accident. Even if the offense kind of is conducive to that, but he's not bad. He's got some arm talent, be interested to see, decent size. Sorry. It's a lot of undrafted free agent quarterbacks. It's all like you're describing them very similarly because right. It's usually you either heard of them or they put up big numbers at a small school. Yeah. Like that's kind of the two brackets that you're getting into. So this is the small school guy.
And his numbers are ridiculous. So in 2021, this is according to the Shepherd website. That's where he played. Threw for exactly 5,000 yards and 53 touchdowns in 2022. He threw for 4,580 yards and 41 touchdowns.
Yeah, it's bonkers.
His dad's like a Hall of Fame or legendary arm wrestler, too, I believe.
Oh, he's the arm wrestler.
Oh, dude. I remember this guy.
That's the arm ESPN wrestling.
Did a at the Senior Bowl, his dad was like on the sideline arm wrestling people.
Really?
It's good.
Like they were doing it on camera. Yeah. So there's something there.
I didn't realize that was him. I know that someone's dad was arm wrestling dad. I just assumed it was like a tight end or offensive lineman. Didn't know it was the quarterback. That's funny. That's really
his father. Travis is the a legend in the arm wrestling world.
That's funny.
Tyson Badgett did play for Luke Getsy, I believe.
Okay.
So another connection there as well.
Yeah, that makes a lot. That makes a lot more sense now. Okay. That's interesting. That's really interesting. I don't know. I love watching the undrafted guys because like in Minnesota, we would have one every single year. So it was Culpepper, Gus Frerotte, and then Sean Hill was the number three. And every single year they brought in someone to beat out Sean Hill. And every single year he beat them out. And it would be the whole most. And he had ended up having a great career. Like Sean Hill started his career as basically just a favor because he was a Maryland guy. He was a Terp. That's what my dad was and a couple other coaches were. Oh, yeah, we'll bring the Maryland guy in, whatever. You know, just Ralph Region, we'll just do him a favor, bring him on. And then he just kept winning the job, the number three spot, kept winning it. Ended up having like a nice like 12, 14 year career, making a bunch of money as a backup. But some of these times, these connections and favors end up being like these huge careers because they just stick and they have a little bit of talent to work with.
I could see him becoming like everybody's favorite quarterback come Bears training camp after like one touchdown. You know how this works.
Yeah,
the Bears don't have Sean Hill. They have Nathan Peterman.
Yeah, so, yeah, right.
So, I mean, what you're saying is Nathan Peterman's going to go on and have 10 more years as a backup. That's what you're saying.
Yeah, right. I mean, everyone keeps giving him a chance. They got PJ Walker, though. That's I forgot that the Bears had PJ Walker. That's right. You could, he's fun. Threw the furthest pass in the NFL last year on that one Hail Mary touchdown.
To DJ Moore.
Yeah.
Ah, that's right. It was TJ. Yeah. Oh boy. Oh, yeah. Already got some natural chemistry there.
No, that's why I love. Yeah, go ahead, John.
Go ahead. You want to keep talking about that?
I was just
going to
say that's why I like that signing. He's a he's a perfect backup for Fields, and he's got that connection with Moore. And so
I've become a bigger believer of having the backup have a similar play style to the starter. Like I've become a bigger believer of that, especially if it's a unique talent like Fields. But it's like as much of a runner, might as well just get another runner as the backup that can do the same thing, so you don't have to change the offense on the fly. So I've become a bigger believer of that.
Every year there's like some undrafted free agent that like captures the imaginations of Bears fans on Twitter or whatnot. It becomes like their favorite player, and they're like stunned when he doesn't make the team and he's released. And there's always that tweet like, you can't release him because he's going to be picked up right away. They always come back.
always. It's every team has these guys too. And it's the best. It's every year.
They're always there to be signed to the practice squad. All right, last question. This is from Erm, E-R-M, on Twitter. Here's the question. Chase Young.
He's good. I mean, he's banged up. So I want to see him this year. I've been waiting for the Chase Young experience to be back in my life. Or is that like a Bears target for next year?
This is another thing I think all fan bases do, but especially the Bears. It's just like anytime, like this was happening with Quinnen Williams yesterday, like anytime any good player has any type of contract question or trade rumor, anything, it's three straight weeks of will the Bears trade for Chase Young. And like in this situation, like forget the Bears for a second, I just don't understand why Washington would even go down that road.
It's like a flyer year for them figuring them out, so I don't think they're trading them.
Well, and also if they are, isn't that a giant red flag? Because that's got to be either there's something seriously continually wrong with the knee, or there's maybe some character off the field stuff there. There's just no logic to me in Washington essentially giving away a former number one pick for unless there's something seriously wrong with him, and in that case you don't want him. So it just doesn't add up to me.
It to me, because they invested so much in those defensive linemen. Now they have to pay them all. Like, so they paid Payne this year, paid John Allen before. Now they have Young and Montez Sweat is the other guy. And Sweat came on last year, had probably his best year of his career last year. So they're going to pick one. So to me, it seems like Sweat would be the guy that maybe could be like dangled out there a little bit as opposed to Chase Young. Like, they have to pick one of them. I think they're kind of going like, let's play it out on the field and let's see like who do we want to invest in. So I think whoever the loser is of the Montez Sweat Chase Young sweepstakes, I guess, is the what the guy that you have to keep an eye on, because they have to kind of sort of pick one after this year based on contract wise and everything else going on. They draft so many freaking defensive linemen. It's ridiculous. And edge players. Everyone will have first rounder after them. But overall, then I mean, how many trade rumors did you guys have to do with DeAndre Hopkins? Probably 5,000 of them over the past couple months.
And we have to tell Ryan Poles to stop, like, hey, we're going to explore the trade market as well. Then instantly, like, boom.
Everything.
Everybody's being mentioned.
Every single player. But, I mean, Chase Young, you don't usually see these types of talents hit the market or be a trade guy. And like you're saying, is that that could be a question mark. That could be a concern.
He played three games last year.
Yeah. I mean, and that it's taken forever for him to get back on the field. Like, even after that injury, which is sometimes 9 months for some people, like it was pretty bad. I know it's he's it's weird because what he showed his rookie year and as a prospect and everything. I mean, he was, should have been the number one pick in that draft if it was just going positionless. And it's just, it's funny how his stock has fallen so much and just like, just because of this injury stuff. So, but the talent's still there. I'm just really curious to watch him this year overall.
Could be a brutal game just like that.
Yeah.
Cause he was so good. He was so good.
So good.
Just, yeah. Tough.
I know. But that's one I'm curious. I want to watch him this year because it could be, someone could get him on the upswing if Washington decides to just cut ties with him. It's his whole stock's going to be fun to watch.
All right. Well, that was our last question, right, Johns?
That's it.
All right. Awesome. Well, Nate, we appreciate you jumping on with us as always. Sounds like we might see you soon too. I don't know. There was rumors out there.
Yeah, there's rumors. I'll be in town for a wedding next weekend and then back again in a month. The back-to-back Chicago trips. I'm stoked.
Nice.
My wife's never been to Chicago. I'm fired up. I'm fired up to show her to town.
Well, it's nice this time of year.
Yeah, I was going to say, you're picking the right time of year to do that. She's not going to want to leave.
It's on purpose. I know. Yeah. And Vegas is, we're entering hell heat season. We're breaking 90s now. So, yeah.
Have you
the Midwest.
Kent placed a bet with each other yet on the Western
Not yet. Not yet. Kent's talking a lot of shit. So I'm going to have to put a little wager on. I have my Knights hat on right now. It's backwards right now, but yeah. I do have some Knights gear on.
So this is Golden Knights versus Dallas Stars, Western Conference Finals.
I mean, when I think about history of hockey and just classic matchups,
Vegas and Dallas.
Yes. I mean, give me the North Stars and I don't know what would be the equivalent for Vegas, but.
Kent's going to come in on here and start yelling at you because Dallas has been going for a while there, Mr. Hogue.
I know, but I'm just bitter because I like the North Stars logo, and now they're the stupid Wild. Come on.
Yeah, I know.
They still could have been the North Stars. You could have the Stars and the North Stars in the same league.
We got the Reds and the Red Sox. Yeah. Reds and Red Sox. No one gets confused.
And White Sox. They're, you know, different color socks. It all works. It all works.
I know. Yeah. Don't overthink it.
That should be.
we had two St. Louis Cardinals at the same time, one baseball, one football team. You know, like it was easy. You know, we can handle this.
All right. Kent says not everyone can be an original six. That's true. All right. Nate, we appreciate you. Make sure everyone's following Nate at Nate_Tice. As always, great follow. You learn a lot about football, and I'm sure we'll be talking to you soon. Everybody gets their summer rest in, and then we'll be right back into some hardcore football and training camp.
Yes, absolutely. Thanks for having me, guys. It's always, always a lot of fun.
All right, Thanks, Nate Tice. Make sure you're reading all the work on The Athletic, theathletic.com/HoganJohns. You can find me at allchgo.com. This is our only episode this week, but we'll be back next week. Bears start OTAs, and we'll have all the coverage from that going on at House Hall. Talk to you then.
See ya.
One of the local writers, Adam Hoagie, or Hogg, excuse me, I don't know how to pronounce the last name.
Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.